Celebrating the written word, this is The County Writes, The County Reads, with Lynn Pickering on 99.3 County FM.
Welcome to the show. Today, the spotlight is on the Kingston Writers' Fest, a festival for readers and writers from September 18th to the 21st. Quoting from the poster, there'll be 13 onstage events, 14 writer studios, 3 reader salons, literary trivia, and poetry to go. Later, I'll catch up with author Wayne Grady, who's hosting a couple of events, and I'll also speak to Antonia Okot-Vitek about her book, We the Kindling, which she'll be discussing with my first guest today, the writer Marilyn Simons. Welcome back to The County Writes, The County Reads, Marilyn.
Oh, thank you very much, Lynn. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's nice to see you again. And I was looking back in the show's archives. You were first mentioned on a Valentine's Day edition of The County Writes, The County Reads in February 2016, when Christine Renaud recommended your book, The Convict Lover.
Wow.
Your first appearance on the show was in May 2017 for your book, Gutenberg's Fingerprint, Paper Pixels and the Lasting Impression of Books. Then in May 2019, I interviewed you and Wayne at your home in Kingston. That time it was for your book, Refuge, and Wayne for his book, Up From Freedom. And the last time was in May 2022 for Woman Watching, Louise de Caroline Lawrence and the Songbirds of Missy Bay. So it's been a while.
Yes, well, it has been. It takes me about 3 years to do a book. So you know, here we are 3 years later.
Yeah, well, you continue to be very busy, but you're very involved in the Kingston Writers' Fest, not just as a presenter, but on various committees. And we're going to talk about the events a little later. But first, I'm anxious to talk about your most recent book, Walking with Beth, Conversations with My 100-Year-Old Friend, which I just received a few hours ago. I'd really like to start with an excerpt. Can you read from the book?
Sure, I would be happy to. So the book is set up in small sections that pretty much represent our conversations here and there over 3 years. So I'm going to read from a section called Collage. Paintings cover every wall of Beth's house, eye level to ceiling. A huge wave rising, boulders on a shore with clouds like drifts of stone above them. Small gilt-framed villages, a large abstract that could be an oriental robe, rectangles of gray and black and impossible cerulean relieved by slashes of stark white, not a still life among them. I've been in Beth's house before, but the COVID gap makes the place seem new, even though nothing has changed except the dining room table, which is awash in objects. Awash gives the wrong impression. In the center is a heap of stocking-like shapes with cords dangling from the tops, the thready undoings of some former mobile. Small white stones take up a vaguely rectangular space. On one side, shells that range in size from tiny scallops and periwinkles to the spiraling former homes of hermit crabs and whelks. On the other side, black stones that look like puddles of polished marble. A handful of twigs, a neat stack of Japanese papers in intricate patterns, a few skeins of bright embroidery thread, thin blocks of wood, some the size of a matchbox, others as big as a deck of playing cards, are stacked, roughly cut from what looks like unfinished shiplap siding. A scattering of pressed, dull red maple leaves. The materials aren't rare or expensive, just bits and bobs she's been gathering on her walks for years, and the gleanings that friends have brought her. "I like how they feel," she says, her fingers caressing a length of chartreuse thread. Centered in front of her chair is a finished painting of torn rice paper in soft blues, searching reds. "The art comes from here," she says, punching herself lightly in the chest. "I don't think or plan. I just move bits of thread and paper and stones around until it feels right." Beth leads me into the living room and sits in her wooden armchair. Beside her, on a small table, dark twigs are silhouetted on a rectangle of bright white paper, a forest in moonlit snow. Nothing is glued in place. The pieces aren't meant to be permanent. I think of the alfombras de Acerén, the sawdust rugs that Mexican families press over the cobblestones, working through the night before Christ arrives for Easter, creating brilliant images of the Holy Family, flowers and crucifixes, all of it obliterated within hours by the feet of singing pilgrims moving down the street behind life-sized wooden statues of Jesus, Mary, and St. John the Apostle. When a piece is pleasing, Beth moves the construction. She calls them her collages, from the dining room to this little table by her armchair, where it stays until a new idea, another urge, moves her. Then she sets the collage on the floor, photographs it, and dismantles it, returning the materials to her dining room table to become something new. It is important that the materials are there on the table, where I can pass and pause and create spontaneously, she says, waving an arm over the sticks and stones and scraps of paper and thread. I just go to the table and whoosh, I'm off on a journey. Out of yourself, I say, or deeper in? Oh, deeper, deeper. I go there and the world moves away.
That was Marilyn Simons reading from her book, Walking with Beth. When and how did you first meet Beth, Marilyn?
Well, neither of us can actually remember when we first met. We feel like we've always been each other's lives, the way friends often feel, I guess. We met sometime, we figured out, in the early 90s, when she moved back to Kingston. She had been living out on Lower Beverly Lake near Delta, Ontario. And when her husband died, she moved into Kingston to a little pied-à-terre they had bought in Portsmouth Village. And I had moved there not too many years before. And we bumped into each other a lot in the literary circles in Kingston. Kingston is a very literary town. There are always readings happening. And we became friends. You know, I saw her across the room and I thought she was so beautiful and so interesting looking. And we've corresponded for years, off and on. I helped her with her first book, Please Write, which she published, I think, when she was 93. Might have been when she was 95. And then when COVID hit, well, not really COVID. COVID wasn't the real spark. When I turned 70, I felt something was shifting. I've never cared about birthdays at all, you know, the 20, 30, 40, 50 kind of big celebrations. I've never really noticed those transitions. But turning 70 felt different to me. My mother died when she was 75, and maybe it was the feeling of getting into the end game. But Beth turned 100 the year that I turned 70. And I thought, well, if anybody knows what these next couple of decades are going to be like, it's her. So I called her up and I said, do you want to get together? And she said, well, it's COVID. I think we should go for a walk. So we did. And we went for a walk and we had such a good time that we said, well, let's get together next Wednesday. And the Wednesday after that, and the Wednesday after that. And so every Wednesday we would meet and go for a walk, fully masked, with our notebooks. And gradually we came to realize that our conversations, which always ended up going to interesting places, might have something of value to other people. And so that's basically how the book came about.
Yeah. Well, I mentioned the book Woman Watching, and when you write about the old ladies you were attracted to, she was one, quote, Louise in her log cabin on Pimisi Bay, sipping strong coffee, smoking unfiltered cigarettes, getting up before dawn to make her daily bird count well into her 90s, end quote. Louise was a lot older than you when you used to visit her. Beth, yeah, as you said, is 30 years older. Did all of these women that you were attracted to, did they have the same characteristics or attitude towards life?
That's an interesting question. I think I think most of these women that I met them very late in their lives, and I was attracted to the way they lived. They were living alone then, and I grew up in a family with four girls, and it was a very busy household. And from the time I was young, it was such a pleasure to be in the company of these women who seemed to have found a way to live within tranquility and peace. And the other thing about them was that, I'm not sure if this is a function of age or maybe they'd been like this their whole lives, but they were very direct. They didn't mince words, and I don't mean to imply that they were unkind. You know, when you get to an advanced age, you no longer want to be an unkind person. But they were very direct. They knew what they thought. And the last thing that really, I think, drew me in is that they treated me like a contemporary. We had conversations, even when I was 7, going to visit Miss Getz, who was probably 50, no, 60 years older than I was, and up to Louise, who was 40 years older than I am, and then Beth, who's 30 years older than I am. They always spoke to me as if I had something to say. And they listened. And I listened because I really believe they had something to say. And these relationships were very, very fundamental to my life.
Well, you not only have several photos of Beth and her artwork on your website, you have two especially adorable photos, one of Beth at the age of 2, pouring tea for invisible friends, and you at age 3, watering your grandmother's garden. And you write, "Tea and gardens are still their greatest pleasures, passions that last a lifetime." And I think that's what really comes through in your book and in your conversations with Beth. Find something that you're passionate about, and it will sustain you for a lifetime. Is that the answer to aging?
Well, you know, I this is not a how-to book, and I don't purport to have any answers at all. But I think Beth is right. She believes very much in passions, and especially as you get older. And we all know that bodies are less than what we want them to be as you get older. There are always health issues. There's often mobility issues. But if you have a deep interest in something that gives you joy every day, then your life can be as fulfilling and as pleasurable at 90 or 100, or Beth is now 105, as it is when you're 20.
You lived for 6 months of the year in Mexico, and you maintained a connection with Beth with weekly phone calls. How important was that continued connection to Beth and to you?
Well, Beth, she organizes her life around visits and phone calls. She has a very large roster of friends and family, cousins and nieces and grandchildren. And we were every Wednesday at 3, and then there was somebody at Friday at 4, and somebody at Saturday at 12, and somebody at Sunday at 1. So she has her whole life parceled out like that, so that even during COVID, those were real handholds, because for all of us, COVID was difficult. I think for older people, it was especially difficult, because when you're not as sure-footed as you once were, you don't want to go out walking by yourself, especially in winter. And the isolation was difficult, very difficult for Beth. And for me, it was just so important to keep that connection with that friendship. And the friendship kept developing over time. And sometimes we'd just be laughing like crazy for half an hour. Everything would strike us funny. And other times we were talking about, you know, very serious issues. It was, I think, it's like any friendship. It matures and deepens the more time you spend together.
Well, we talked about having something you're passionate about, and you are passionate about writing. I think we'll go to the Kingston Writers Fest now. And you were a founding artistic director in 2009, and you continue your involvement serving on various committees. When I heard last week that the Edmonton School Board had removed more than 200 books from school libraries, including George Orwell's 1984, Maya Angelou's I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, Aldous Huxley's Brave New World, and of course, Margaret Atwood's The Handmaid's Tale, I thought how important events like writers' festivals are, not only for readers, but for the writers as well. And of course, the theme for this year's Kingston Writers Fest is from Margaret Atwood, A Word After a Word After a Word is Power. And she launched the Writers Fest this year and the inaugural Writers Fest in 2009. What was your response when you heard that about the Edmonton School Board?
Well, you know, it's just so sad. It's just so wrong. Margaret wrote a Substack about it.
Yes. Everybody can see that online. Yeah.
Right. You know, there have always been books removed from libraries because of one complaint or another. This is not new. But I think what is new is the frequency of it, the intentionality of it. There are groups of people who are very keen on limiting what can be said, what can be written, what can be read. And I think any civil society has to be open to new ideas. We have to be open to other ways of expressing ourselves. I mean, books do two things. They mirror ourselves back to us, and they mirror the society that they're writing about. And we need both of those. In fact, at the festival this year, we're having Ira Wells, who wrote a book called On Book Banning. And he's coming to the festival, and I really, really look forward to that because he's one of the very, very strong voices that's raised in Canada today against the banning of books, and not just the kind of official banning, but the no, you can't read that kind of conversation that happens within families, within schools, within just in conversation with people.
Yeah. And I'm going to say that Alberta Premier Danielle Smith claims that the school board's removal of the books is vicious compliance. It's in response to the directive from the province to identify books that are not age appropriate and to remove them. And as you said, Margaret Atwood, of course, had a response, which you can find online. Well, let's get back to the Writers' Fest. You're taking part in two events. You're presenting Walking with Beth on Sunday, September 21st from 3:30 to 4:30 in the Limestone Ballroom in the Marriott Hotel. And on Friday morning, September 19th from 10 to 11:30, again in the Limestone Ballroom, Atonia Ocott-Bitek will be discussing her book, We the Kindling. And I'm going to be speaking to Atonia in the next segment, but your event is titled What We Carry. What can people expect from that event?
Oh, Atonia's book is just fantastic. It's about a very difficult subject, which is the kidnapping of young women, children, really, school children, females, by the North Ugandan Army and pressing them into service for the army as cooks and cleaners and baby machines. And you can't get a more difficult subject than that, really, especially as a female reader. It's very touching. But she writes it in such a way that it's not only understandable, but you can see the broader implications. So she tells a story from the point of view of five women when they're grown and after they've come back into their communities. So it's in a way, it's a survival story. And so there's a certain amount of resilience that comes through there, but they carry the memories and the scars of those years that they were working for the army. And also the community carries those scars because the community doesn't really know what to do with them when they come back. Nobody can forget what they have gone through. Nobody can treat them just like, you know, the girls that they were when they were picked up and left. Yeah. So I think it has resonances for all of us. It's everybody carries scars. Everybody is part of a community. And I think the book has really deep resonances for everyone.
As I said at the beginning of the show, there are so many events going on. And I just wonder, is there any others you want to highlight? I'm going to be speaking to Wayne, of course, in the final segment of the show today, but some other events that you'd like to just publicize.
Yes. So we had two cancellations, and so there are two new events that if you have an older version of the program, you might not have seen. But on Saturday afternoon, we have an event with Eric Andrew G, and it's called The Mind Mappers. And he's a Globe and Mail correspondent in Quebec, and he wrote an amazing book about Wilder Penfield and the creation of the Neurological Institute and his friendship with another scientist, William Cohn, and how that friendship fell apart as one gained notoriety and fame and the other one sort of slid into obscurity. So, of course, that really interests me because it's largely about friendship as well as medical science. And he's going to be on stage with Ann Collins. Ann Collins, years ago, I think 87, wrote in The Sleep Room about the Allen Institute. So she understands that neurological world and, the, in her case, the CIA experiments on unwitting victims. And then Anne will be appearing herself on Sunday morning, I think from 10 to 11:30. Anne Collins is probably Canada's top editor. She's now executive editor and vice president of Random House Canada. And she's actually, I'm going to be on stage with her, interviewing her because she was my editor. But we're going to be talking about how the editing process works. What happens between the time a manuscript is handed in and it comes out as a Random House book? What goes into the editing? What goes into the choosing of a manuscript? And so I expect the audience will be filled with both writers and readers because it's a perennial curiosity how books get made.
Well, there's certainly a lot going on, and I want to thank you for joining me today, Marilyn. I'll be talking to Wayne, as I said, in the final segment.
Oh, thank you, Lynn, for continuing to bring books to the people of the county and to a broader area. So thank you.
Marilyn Simons is the author of Walking with Beth, Conversations with My 100-Year-Old Friend. It's published by Random House Canada. To see photos of Beth and Marilyn, go to Marilyn's website, marilynsimons.com. And that is spelled MERILYNSIMONDS. And for all the news about the Kingston Writers Fest, go to the Facebook page or website, kingstonwritersfest.ca. Up next, a conversation with Otonia Okot-Vitek, author of We the Kindling. You're listening to 99.3 County FM, the voice of the county.